News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show. Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 27th of July, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
Where did they come
and it's
from?
7 minutes. That's my theme song.
That's his theme. He has his own theme because he's impotent.
I forgot. Excuse me.
That's what happens when you become impotent. You know what I'm saying?
You just need to get your pronunciation better.
That's right.
You're on radio now, son.
It's a lonely place in that mind.
Yes, I have my own theme song.
Okay.
I want a copy of that.
Well, extract it from the podcast.
Right. Yeah, right. You'll wind up having
more
that.
The audio guy.
No, I wouldn't right. go there. But, yeah, so here we are. It is Soundbites, and we'll be taking your calls. You know the number. Rob has returned to us. We missed him last week.
His bail wasn't too bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. And your aim can get better. So I think we're in good shape for the rest of the time. This week's poll, I've taken a new tack.
Now, wait a minute. Hang on a second. Yeah. Let's back up. Why are you waiting until I'm on the phone to say something like that when you know I can't respond?
Because that's why we do it.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, radio professional. Did you
know you... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, I was out at the Greasetown Hall, and I don't know if you're familiar
parking
with...
Parking tickets?
Yeah, no, that's that's court.
Sorry.
They're closed on Sunday. Anyway...
no, jail.
I was out there for the Jimmy Sturr concert. Does anybody know anything about polka in there? Not a chance.
All right. Sure everybody, don't. Polka!
Hey, no, I it's not chicken because dance. I'm a polka fan. It was for my other gig, but it was quite an afternoon as we got to play in the rain. So trust me, I wish I was here in the studio at that time. But it was good times. So I'm glad
they
to be back.
They always put the guys playing with electricity out in the rain, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was not fun. Electricity plus downpouring rain does not equal a fun time. You know what I mean?
How many accordions?
I think there was only one. It was kind of like a mini big band.
Ah.
You know what I mean? So it was a big band sound, but it was polka. I mean, this guy is like Elvis
like
in the polka
Kiss,
world.
Mini Kiss, except it's for polka.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's like Elvis. I mean, there were people that were literally sitting in the downpouring rain.
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. He did roll out the barrel.
Of course he did.
So there you go. There was no beer, though, unfortunately.
What?
Beer barrel polka, and there was no beer.
What's the point of a polka party without beer?
No, that's why you pregame.
You know, in Poland, yeah. That's illegal.
Were they partying out in the parking lot? Were they tailgating?
It was a good time. No, that was actually at my house beforehand, but no, I'm just kidding. Anyway, yes, no, it's good to be back.
Well, we are delighted to have you back with us. Now, I've been trying something
new.
Why,
was he gone?
now he's trying to think, should I answer the phone? Should I
see
answer the remark? Yeah, that's all about the timing.
Yes. It's like the, you know, when the waitress comes by and always asks you, you've got a mouthful of food, how's your meal?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
They go to special school, I think, for that.
Yeah, I think they do. Now, normally, I've had this new thing where I've been reading the poll at the top of the show so that people will be able to call in and talk about it. But if you want to talk about the poll, you'll be able to read it online. What I want to talk about is something that seems to be sweeping the nation at the moment. There is a DNS flaw out there. DNS is the domain name services. Domain name services. When you go out on the internet and you put in an address like soundbites.org, the internet doesn't understand soundbites.org. The internet only understands numbers like 129.21.31.88. So what happens is there are things called domain name servers. And they translate the name you give it to the number that the internet understands. You with me so far? It's kind of just a little translation.
It's a giant phone book.
It's a giant phone book.
So it's like people have trouble remembering numbers, but they can remember names so much easier.
Right. Yeah. So I can go through my cell phone and say, call Steve. And, though I have everybody in my last name because I know 50 Steves. So I go in and say, call Ray. and it will call Steve. I don't have to remember his number.
But then when you need to remember someone's number, you can't.
You're doomed. You're doomed.
It's speed dial 6. I don't know what the number is.
Exactly. But what happened is there's a flaw in the domain name services this month. And this was researched and put out there. And one of the things that researchers agreed on was a major coordinated fix earlier this month. And they decided they would withhold details on the vulnerability itself in order to give users enough time to apply updates. That way we don't tell the bad guys before we fix the problem. Unfortunately, another researcher spilled the beans. Halvar Flake, although it may be pronounced Flake, who is talented in the ways of reverse engineering and not, it seems, part of any confidentiality agreement, speculated on the details of the attack in his blog. Flocky, or Flake, disagrees on the utility of the 29-day blackout period. He argues that people are better off with more information. He said it feels like we're all trying to rock the train. Flake dismissed his own expertise and assumed his guess must be wrong, but it turns out he was dead on. Matasano Security released their own blog on Monday announcing that Flake was right and delving further into the details. They quickly realized they shouldn't have done that and pulled the blog entry, but of course, by then it was too late. Millions of RSS readers had already gotten the entry, and many, many of us have a copy of it. Let's hope Flake is right and that this silence period is not really advantageous, because the details of the attack became generally known 11 days after the patch, not 29. In the meantime, if you run a DNS server, patch as fast as you can. And I believe that's what we've been seeing around the net. There are places you just weren't mm-hmm. able to get to.
For a while, yeah.
I had trouble getting on last night.
I posted a link at Doxpara Research, which is Dan Kaminsky, a very well-known security researcher. He has a DNS checker that will check your ISP's DNS or your own DNS if you're running one to see if it has a problem. Apparently, there was a 1 in 65,000 chance that someone could steal your internet connection.
Right.
Which sounds like a pretty high number, but there's billions of internet connections every second. So 1 in 65,000 is a very, very low number.
Very, very low number. Yeah. So, all right, that's...
So now after the patch, it's 1 in 200 million or even a couple billion chance. So it's,
right. There's always been a chance.
Yeah.
But it's much, much, much lower
and
now.
And it's just corrected for this time being.
Right.
Until they find another way around it.
Right. Exactly. All right. Our first caller is Jerry in Penyan, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
I'm having a problem with my router. I'm using Time Warner, and we used to be Adelphia down here in Penyan. And every so often on some of the, every few sites, I'll get the requested URL listing was not found on the server, or I'll get a page that says former Adelphia customers how to fix the problem. If I don't use the router, everything works perfectly, and I never get these messages. But with the router, I get these, and I just can't get to some sites.
What brand of router are you using?
It's a Belkin.
Belkin. I knew he was going to say Belkin. Yeah.
It's likely you have your Adelphia DNS IPs in the router, and so it's looking for Adelphia servers that may not exist anymore.
Right. When you got the page that says Adelphia customers, here's how to fix this problem,
yeah.
What did you do?
I did exactly what they said, and everything they said to do, I'd already done.
What you might want to try doing is doing a hard reset on the Belkin to zero it all out.
How do I do that?
Well, there's usually on the back of the machine a little button or a hole where you can stick a paperclip and it says reset next to it. You usually got to hold it in for 3 to 5 seconds.
Sometimes you have to hold it in while you're plugging the power in. It'd be in the manual for the device.
Okay.
The other thing is that for a time, Belkin routers, every third or fourth or fifth connection would send you, instead of sending you where you wanted to go, would send you to a site that was paying Belkin to let them advertise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've stopped that practice, but if you've got a router that still does that, you need to make contact with the folks at Belkin about getting an update to the BIOS.
Or firmware. Oh.
Firmware, well, same thing.
Okay, I updated the firmware. I haven't tried the hard reset. This problem didn't start until a couple weeks ago.
Well, I would start with the hard reset and see where that takes you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can check your DNS entries in the Belkin router and make sure that they are set for Time Warner and not for Adelphia.
How do I know what Time Warner is?
I'm looking that up now.
Now, when you say you did these things in the router, this is your own Belkin router or the cable modem?
It's my own Belkin router.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the instructions aren't for the cable modem itself. Why would they care if you had a Belkin router? Why would they give instructions for a Belkin router?
No, they give instructions on how to change the settings in my Mac. There's nothing about the router in the instructions.
You have to do those same instructions in your router, which is likely setting the DNS entries in your router to be Time Warner and not Adelphia. And Time Warner's routers are 24.92.226.11.
Maybe not down there, though.
That could be.
That's my IP.
That will tell you what your IP is, but not what your DNS is. Are you now under Rochester Time Warner or Syracuse Time Warner?
We're under Finger Lakes Time Warner.
Finger Lakes. Well, so it might be a different IP.
Well, if he goes to the command prompt and types in ipconfig /all.
All he'll get is the internal Belkin router, the 192.
No, it just shows the DNSs too.
The DNS that the router is reporting
the router,
to the computer.
But not, but that's,
if the router could be passing through.
No, the other DNSs.
Yeah. So it could be that your router is still set for Adelphia, and you need to change that to Roadrunner. Now, Roadrunner also, Time Warner locally, I'm not sure how widespread, but in Rochester at least, they changed their DNS IPs a few months ago, and you had to change your DNS in your router or in your computer.
And the DNS server.
Yes, you will see the DNS server, but if you're on a router, what you'll get is the router's DNS servers, not the cable modem's DNS servers.
And sometimes the router has its own DNS entered and is not passing through the cable router's DNS server.
But I would start where Dave said a while ago, start with reset, give it a hard reset. The problem with these sorts of things is that there are so many variables in it. Are you the only machine on this network?
Yes.
Then get your Belkin router out of there.
Yeah, just
use it a couple of days at least.
He says it works fine without the Belkin.
Okay, I've done that. It works perfectly.
But then the problem is definitely the Belkin router.
Yeah, I'm saying, why do you need the router anyways if this is the only machine?
It's nice to have a router even on one machine, because then you have that private hardware firewall and a private
the hardware
private
firewall,
IP.
Plus, I have wires run to a couple other places where I can take the computer, but I only have one computer at a time on.
Right.
Oh, okay.
But in this particular case, I'd start with the hard reset on the router, and go in, you look in the manual, go into the router and see what the DNSs are set for. Maybe to call your local Time Warner folks and find out what the DNSs are, or it should be on their website.
Okay.
And then you can make sure that you've got the correct DNS settings. And if it only started a few days ago, it could be they got hit by the same problem.
And it might have been the DNS poison bug, while they were changing to the new DNS server, his computer couldn't access some websites.
Right. Yep. Isn't the internet fun? We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enreich, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, each and every one of you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. For all you OS X folks, Mac antivirus maker Intego, like Stratego, only it's Intego, has published an alert about a potential OS X virus that an enterprising individual is trying to sell through auction with absolutely no technical information to go on. The antivirus maker is treating the announcement with caution. Based on the rate and type of vulnerabilities identified by projects like the Month of Apple Bugs, it isn't too far-fetched to expect that there are dozens or even hundreds of OS X specific viruses, malware creations that are sitting on the systems of their developers, but which do not have many opportunities for widespread distribution. Some of the more successful OS X specific pieces of malware have been distributed through file sharing sites and P2P applications, usually claiming to be for highly desirable software. A 5 to 10 megabyte download for an application suite that should be 500 to 600 meg generally leaves clues that something is not quite right.
There's a poker game one that's running around lately. Here's a brand new poker game for the Mac, and it steals your stuff.
Yep. More common, though, are exploit attempts against QuickTime and popular OS X web browsers, with U.S. developer Sunbelt Software having identified and tracked a number of these types of vulnerabilities, though their effectiveness at infecting OS X targets in the wild isn't known. The exploits used in these types of attacks will compromise a victim system, but there aren't any readily available figures as to how many victims have actually been affected by them. From Intego's posting, it appears that the enterprising auctioneer seems determined to make sure his name is one that is not forgotten when it comes to Apple security, claiming that his exploit is a poisoned zip archive that will, and I quote, KO the system hard drive, unquote, when unarchived. He may not be operating in the scale of some of the other guys who've put out these sorts of viruses, but there might not even be a kernel of truth.
But that's also technically wrong.
But it is feasible that there is something in the OS X archive utility that lends itself to exploitation and system control, like the recent Art Agent of vulnerability.
Yeah, after you unarchive it, you still have to run it.
No, it's the actual unarchiving. Unarchiving runs, lets it run.
It just decompresses the compressed files.
The archive
files.
Utility yeah. actually hands control over to the zip archive itself. That's the way it works on a Mac.
Yeah, it can automatically run the installer.
Yep.
Yeah, the active word there is can. I think, Nick, you're right. Many of them do that. And, Steve, you're also right. Some of them don't. That's my experience.
Right. Right.
Yeah, it's that catch-22.
But it is possible that they can, and therefore...
Yeah.
You're trying to make things easy for... You remember in the olden days, we'd have to tell people how to download stuff from the internet. First you download it, and then you have to find where you download it to. Then you have to decompress it, and then you have to run what...
Find where you decompressed it,
and then you have to run the thing that you decompressed, and then you got the program you really wanted 16 steps ago.
Right.
That's why I always
So they've
folks.
Added all this auto-decompression and auto-installing.
But the point is, yep, now it is time for Mac people flaw. To really be more careful, finally.
Yep.
They can get viruses.
Read messages carefully. I had a call this week from someone that got one of the scareware messages. Your computer's infected. Click here and give us your credit card number and we'll clean you out.
Yeah, right.
Yes, we will.
You will.
Clean you out of
$29.95. Yeah.
You know, Mac people and Vista people both need to learn to not mindlessly click OK.
And to run Clam AV.
Did you see where PC Magazine just put out this month's issue, just came out with Microsoft more or less talking out of both sides of their mouth?
That would be new. What'd they say?
No. Well, Ballmer said he wants to copy the Mac.
Yeah.
Well,
now they're admitting it?
No. No, what I'm talking about is...
That's news.
Gates was sitting there, you know, defending Vista, but then he turned around, and in the next conversation they had elsewhere, he's sitting there saying, wondering how fast we can get System 7 out there to, you know, redeem them from the bad press and everything else that they're getting from Vista.
Yeah, forget about Vista. Just wait till Windows 7.
So they're talking about rushing Windows 7
by next year
to alleviate the problems that were caused by rushing Vista.
You got it.
Okay. I understand.
That's exactly
it. The thing of it is, and like I said before, hear me now, remember me later, that I think this new System 7 is going to be a blend between XP, which is pretty rock solid right now, and some of the features of Vista. But not all this security.
Right.
The so-called security stuff that was supposed to help make your life a lot easier is turning out to be a big pain in your butt because it constantly asks you, even if you want to install a program on your computer.
Well, I believe what we're going to see in Windows 7 is a more solid link to things like Windows Live.
Right.
To things that Microsoft can charge a fee for. Do you want all the functionality of Windows? You have to pay a fee to get them all.
An annual fee. Yeah. Well, and the other big problem with Vista was the driver issue where you couldn't get drivers for your old stuff. Now, how much of that is Microsoft's fault for making the drivers hard to write or impossible to write? And how much of that is the peripheral vendor's fault for not writing a driver for an old printer so they can sell you a new printer?
Either way, the consumer loses.
Right.
It doesn't matter whose fault it is.
Right. Well, like I say, though, but what they're trying to do is also, which they admitted Vista didn't do a very good job of, is making it easier for other companies to write drivers and code for.
Well, and that's part of the problem. They need to make it proprietary or they don't make money. They need to open it up or they don't make money. So how do you win?
But the other big issue was, and a lot of folks were complaining, is, you know, like I had one client. They've got two other XP machines, and it runs fine with a couple of these printers. And this printer is like only a couple months old. They go to Vista, get this other machine with Vista on it, and they're told, oh, it won't work with this brand new printer. And it's like, no, that's not acceptable. You know, I got to have it, because of his livelihood, got to have it work with Vista. He wound up upgrading it back to Windows XP.
Yep. All right, our next caller, Barry. From Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Good morning. I have two questions, if I could, please. The first one is I'm experienced with MS Outlook, and what I do with it is I back up my entire Outlook by exporting my file to a PST file, one big, huge PST file, and then I save that on an external drive if I ever need the backup. and then I can just import that big PST file. Now I'm starting to use Thunderbird. How can I do a similar thing? I don't know even where the file is that all this stuff is saved in Thunderbird.
Go ahead.
For what? Your emails and all that stuff?
Yep.
You're running on a Windows machine now?
Yep.
You got to go into...
It's called your profile, and I'm posting
it. It's under user. Yeah, there's a link on our site to it. It's under your user. I just said Steve.
Yeah, you
got
to go into your... It's under your documents and settings savings, and then your particular folder, and then there's one called local settings.
Right.
And it's under local settings that you go under application data, and there is where all the Mozilla stuff and that is stored, all your emails, your settings, and all that for it.
So it's not in one big file like on Outlook, which is a PST file?
Right, and that's a good thing. If any little bit of that one big file gets corrupted, you lose all of your mail.
Okay. Yeah.
Thunderbird and most better mail programs store each message as a single file. So if something gets corrupted, you only lose one message, not all of your mail.
So then I guess really I have to ask a different question. With Thunderbird then, how do I back up everything in case my machine goes down?
You copy that entire profile direct.
Or you can export it. Within Thunderbird, you can export.
How do you do that? That's what I can't find.
Select all the things that you want to export, then go to File, Export.
Oh, okay. Well, I've done that, and in fact, I'm actually doing that right now. And when I go to File, I don't have any export tab.
Maybe it's under Tools. We're looking for it, not on ours.
Let's see. Under?
On Tools, there's Import, but not Export. This is where I'm stuck.
All right, so you got to go. You're going to have to do each thing. Let's see, as far as the mail.
I don't have Thunderbird installed on this machine.
Yeah, and right now,
I'm posting a link now for how to back up your Thunderbird profile.
Yeah, because I have one folder right now selected looking for an export tab, and there's no export tab I can find anywhere.
You can also just drag the messages into a folder to be backed up, and it creates individual mbox files, which is the message file format.
Yeah, it's a little cumbersome. Yeah. What I wanted to do is take like my entire inbox and then export it.
Well, like I said,
right, it's in Documents and Settings, whatever your username is, Application Data, Thunderbird.
Okay.
You may not be able to see the application data directory unless you show hidden files and folders.
Okay. But just grab that whole folder.
Take that entire thing, and that takes your everything. You know, maybe you want to zip it up before you move it to something else, depending on how big it is. But you take that whole directory, all the subfolders, it gets everything.
And on the Macintosh, it's on User Library Mozilla. So it's just one big folder with all the little files in it.
Right. Got it?
And for some reason, the way the Mozilla names the profile directory some arbitrary random file name.
That's to prevent viruses from
finding User Library Mail or something like that. Yeah. Mine is named 2Go5Quinnipur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my one at home starts with, I think, I don't remember. Doesn't matter. But that's what you need to do, and that's the deal. I like Thunderbird. I use my Thunderbird mostly in IMAP mode, so the mail stays on the server. You know, in particular for work, I make sure that the mail gets backed up every night. Well, I make sure that my Linux administrator backs up the mail every night. he does all the hard work. I just issue edicts and proclamations.
And the
you the boss.
The reason that we recommend Thunderbird is because of the security problems inside of Outlook and Outlook Express, where you can get an email that contains viruses and malicious software, then you get infected just by opening that email.
And because of the delicacy of the one file solution that Microsoft is so fond of. The registry, one file. Your PST file, one file. You get one bad email in there and your whole PST file is corrupted. So that's why I personally prefer things like Thunderbird, where all the messages are saved individually.
Oh, and Mozilla has a program called Moz Backup, specifically for backing up your Thunderbird profiles.
Right.
The alternative I like is just to use web-based mail, and I let Yahoo worry about my backups.
Right.
And viruses.
Or Gmail or whoever.
Yeah.
Although you got to be careful on that. Was it Charter? Charter Internet was apparently big out west. They lost several hundred million email messages and said, sorry, you should have backed them up.
Yeah. But I find that's less likely with Gmail.
Yeah.
Yeah, go to the big servers.
Right.
The guys, the pros.
Well, if Charter's your ISP, you would expect your ISP to handle things right.
Well, you would. Yes,
same,
yes,
same thing,
yes,
here,
you
with Time Warner or Frontier. They both offer webmail to your own accounts.
Right.
And Time Warner now is finally useful that you get more than 5 megs of storage space.
Yeah, right. Right. Our next caller is George from Webster, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I really appreciate your program, as probably others do, too.
Thank you.
I'm sorry if this is a repeat question from something in the past.
We'll just hang up on you, Jim.
Okay. That's a deal. I have a compact computer with Vista, and I'm having problems printing PDF files from websites like the IRS website or things like that.
Are you using Internet Explorer?
No.
With the government website?
Yes.
My wife ran into the same issue when she's trying to print off different forms for clients.
Right.
There's a number of websites you've got to use IE for because they just don't work with Thunderbird or any of the other browsers.
Oh, no kidding. That Firefox or...
Yeah. No, they just won't print, or they print garbage.
They're the government, and they don't have to.
But you should be able to download the PDF and then print it with a PDF reader, you know, Acrobat or one of the other readers.
Right. Yeah.
I do have Adobe Reader 9.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but you would have to actually download it and not just open it in another window, but actually download the file to your machine, open it up from your machine, and then print it out.
Okay, now when I do download it, it asks me if, in other words, doing a save as type. Is that what you mean by downloading?
No, right-click on the link to the PDF.
Oh, I see.
And from that, select save or save as.
Okay.
Save link location.
Yes, or save linked file as.
Right.
I gotcha.
And then print that file.
I will try that.
There's also the question of what, do you have a problem with printing PDFs from other sites?
No. I mean, I don't have any problem printing things from places like MapQuest. I don't know if that's PDF.
Yeah, it's just the government.
Yeah.
All right.
Try using IE.
All right, whatever. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's time for yet another news item. Mozilla, speaking of Thunderbird, Mozilla Messaging patched 9 security vulnerabilities in Thunderbird last week, the first time it's plugged holes in the email software since early May. Thunderbird 2.0.0.16, they're heading toward Apple naming numbering conventions here, which was added to Mozilla's download servers in the midweek, quashes 9 bugs, including one that was patched last week in Firefox, the company's open source browser. The remainder fix flaws that were first addressed in early July when Mozilla updated Firefox to version 2.0.0.15. Not unusual for Thunderbird security updates to lag a little bit behind those released for Firefox. 7 of the 9 bugs were rated moderate by Mozilla, which is their second lowest of the 4 rankings in its threat system. The other 2 were pegged as low, which I shouldn't have to tell you is the lowest ranking in their threat system. The bug patched in Thunderbird Wednesday that was fixed in Firefox last week was the browser rendering engine CSS value array data structure. According to Mozilla, the vulnerability could be used by hackers to force a crash and from there run malicious code. Several other just-patched Thunderbird vulnerabilities could also be used by attackers to execute code remotely. Of course, the entire Thunderbird 2.x line is on the way out. Most of Mozilla's attention now is on Thunderbird 3, which has been available as an Alpha 1 preview for more than 2 months. You can download Thunderbird version 2.0.16 for Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux from the Mozilla site, or use the email client's built-in updater, or wait for the automatic update notification, which generally appears in 24 to 48 hours. So if you've been seeing updates for your system, just like Dave has been seeing for Second Life and has been ignoring completely, you should upgrade to the latest and greatest now.
I'm so used to the others.
Well, you're so used to not reading what's on the screen, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was busy on doing other things.
Yeah.
Still working.
You have to read in Second Life?
RTFM. You have to read in everything. It's terrible. It's a terrible thing. Our next caller is George from Penfield, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Okay. When I come up from a cold start, I get a 4-inch server window that says open file - security warning. And it says this publisher could not be verified. Are you sure you want to run the software, which I don't want to run? And then there's a name of a program which I deleted over 2 years ago, and publisher says unknown publisher type application.
What is the name of the program?
Win Antivirus Pro 2007 Free Install.x.
You've been hacked.
That's what I figured.
Yeah, your best bet at this
point.
Well,
this is one of the fake antivirus programs that people get scared into installing that pops up and say you're infected.
Yeah, when you get a pop-up that says you may be infected,
you
click
are.
Here. You probably aren't. You're getting that from either an email message or a website, and you just ignore it. If you click on it, then the proper message would be you are infected now.
Click here to become infected.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That's better.
So you definitely want to avoid all of those. In your particular case, George, you need to dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com. That should clear out the Win Antivirus Pro.
Securitytango.com.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
It is a tough one. But give that a try first. If it doesn't work, then you can take it to someone like Steve or Dave and have them fix it for you.
Remember that guy on Google, was that last year? I didn't hear how it turned out. He bought an ad on Google as a social experiment and said, are you virus-free? Click here to become infected.
And people did.
People did, and he made money. Nothing happened. He didn't actually infect
anyone,
but it was, people clicked on it.
Right. Maybe you could take on it and say, learn about virus infection here.
Yeah.
Give him a big blue button.
You've been infected. Now learn.
Now learn. That's right. It's like being thrown into the deep end of the pool.
With the
Isn't
sharks.
That how we all learn to swim? I want to learn to swim, Daddy. Okay, there you go, kid. The shallow end's that way.
I had to stop taking lessons.
Ah, dear old dad.
When I was a kid, I had to stop taking swimming lessons when I could dive to the concrete at the other end of the pool.
Yeah. I took lessons as a very young kid, and you know, the first week you get in the shallow end and you're playing around. Next week, I just went right to the deep end. I said, I've had my lesson. They said, no, there's a whole lot more. Okay, I suppose. But I was happy. That's really all that counts, isn't it?
Happy and wet.
Happy and wet. That's the name of the game.
I'm a water baby. Always have been. My daughter is, too. You get a choice of, you know, dry or wet, and we'll take water any day of the week.
Sounds good to me.
I unfortunately have a pond in my backyard, but not a swimmable area.
That's still our goal.
Can you fish?
What?
Can you fish in your pond?
You could.
You said the turtle moved on, didn't he?
The turtle. We had a turtle in our pond, and he has moved on. I don't know if he moved on voluntarily or not, but he's gone.
Did he become turtle soup?
Yeah, I believe someone found him. But he was a big old snapping turtle, and we used to feed him during parties. We used to take out some hot dogs just for the turtle. And reach out. Insanely dangerous. You could lose their beaks are so strong. You could lose a finger to them.
Sure.
But, you know, we'd throw them in there and he'd snap them right up, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, we used to stock it with fish that he would also eat. That was an odd sort of combination. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enreich, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco News. 49 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbites at 1180 WTM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enreich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, strap your seatbelts on, kiddies. It's that time once again. Grab your footy jammies, a mug of hot cocoa, set Indian style, and a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Okay, Lucy Lou, let's go on to part two. You know, I still haven't found it in any of my descriptions, any of my listings, that I'm this big repository or suppository, either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking it in the...
Yeah.
Of software. Just because people misplace their software, it then becomes my issue because I can't install the operating system on their system, or if it's going to take me a little longer, and I'm going to have to charge you for it. Hello, if you kept track of your own software and documentation, it would make things go faster. But when I have to install, say, Windows XP from scratch, and then go up to the web and download the drivers for the motherboard, the sound cards, the network.
And that's the catch-22, is how do you download the driver if you can't get on the internet?
Right.
And the other thing, too, is even if they give me just, I got the Windows CD.
Yep.
And, it's version 1A. Now I got to update, not only download the drivers, but I got to get you up to Service Pack 3. and get all the other stuff for it. That takes time. And no, I don't have this endless library for every configuration and possible computer out there. It just won't happen.
I had one the other day where the woman had her disks, which was great, but no serial number. And it wasn't stuck on the side of the computer.
Right.
Yeah. See, I love when they started doing that, because now it's on the side of the computer.
Yes. I keep a list of every single open source piece of software ever written. I keep it on the internet.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. We're giving Del Glavy a shot, and we're going to put him away for another week. We're going to fold him up tight and stick him in a drawer and close the drawer and be like the guy in Get Smart. Open the drawer, and there he is. It wasn't Jaime. That was Agent something or other. Some other number. But we'll be... Dave, where are you going? We're on the air. Dave?
One Dave? More question before the news.
Dave left. All right.
We're going to give him a shot here.
We got time for a couple of questions without Dave? All right. Our next caller is Brian from Attica, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's your question? Brian? You said I had time for one question.
I held up one finger, as in 1 minute.
No. When I say, do I have time for one question, you answer that before you tell me how much time I have left. You go no and say 1 minute, not yes and one.
He held up his finger.
Well, you just can't read me that well, apparently.
No, right.
No, he said
if
one
say,
call. We have time for one call.
Do I have time for any more calls? You went... To me, that says, yes, I have time for one more call, not, no, there's only one call.
You said a question, not a call. You could ask yourself a question for all I care.
I don't want to talk to you until I have a break now.
Don't be mad.
Communication breakdown.
All right,
we're
all going to take a break. Brian, I'm sorry, you're going to have to hang on now until Rob decides you can call in. Well, we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show. You're going to tell me how much time I have left? You're not even going to tell me that, are you? Look at you! I'm sure that's what you're talking about. The greatest, oh, go away.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. No matter what you may think, we are sound bites.
Listen, 1 minute, all right?
Thanks. All right. Every week, as you know, we do a poll on the Soundbites website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll was about the fact that so many viruses and worms and Trojans and everything else are coming in through email, through peer-to-peer networking, which is mostly in music. And so the question was, how careful are you when you steal music? 283 of you voted. Making it number 219 on the all-time hit list. Thank you all very much. And 54% of you said all my music is obtained illegally. 29% said objection leading the witness. 10% said I prefer you didn't call it stealing. 3% said very. And 3%, of course, said going commando. This week's poll has to do with Google, our lovely and delightful friends at Google. Barring some unlikely bolt of inspiration at Microsoft, Google should continue to pad its already formidable lead in search advertising. And now that Google CEO Eric Schmidt says the company intends to turn its attention to display ads, who of sane mind would bet against its chances? But Google obviously doesn't agree that size and market dominance pose even remote antitrust parallels with IBM in the 60s or Microsoft in the 90s. The chief reason, the markets in question are very different. Early Friday, Google's general counsel, Kent Walker, and Dana Wagner, the U.S. Competition Counsel, explained why. The nature of the internet is just a fundamentally different world from the sale of packaged software, the bundling of software with OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, said Walker. The standard line we have is that competition is just one click away. Walker offered what he called both a structural answer as well as the behavioral answer. Google does acknowledge its role as a disruptive company, but Walker suggests that the real battle is between desktop-based computing, including operating systems and productivity applications, and cloud-based computing. To the degree the latter trend emerges, he said, that spells trouble for Microsoft. In a sense, that's the real market, if you will, he said. It's how people use technology to do what they need to do. That can be search to find things on the internet, but more broadly, it's to use the internet, to use the network to share information to create new goods, tools, and services. Since antitrust decisions gets decided in Washington, it's not surprising to learn that lobbyists for Google and its rivals are shadowing each other in the quarters of power. If there were no lobbyists, can you imagine how much work Congress would actually have time to get done? Google's Walker suggested that the noise around competition issues is
probably
being generated by competitors
job.
Like Microsoft, right? But also the cable and phone companies who don't like Google's position regarding net neutrality. So the question of the week is Google a monopoly? And I made it real simple this time. Yes, no, and who cares? Yes, no, and who cares? Currently, we have 90 votes. 49% of you don't even care. 36% of you say no. 16% say yes. Now, here's the important part. When you are done with taking the poll, you want to click on the little yellow box underneath it. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, ow, sorry. Oh, sorry. Actually heard that this morning. I was walking from the bathroom to the bedroom, and the cat who was walking in front of me just flopped right down at my feet.
Again,
and I did accident. It was quite accidentally. I kicked her. Not hard, and she was indignant.
Yeah, like, no, they give me this look. What'd you do that for? Exactly. It just stopped in front of me.
Exactly. My reflexes could have made me miss you. Yep. Why didn't yours make you miss me?
And people call cats smart.
Yep. You're right.
Ours will sleep at the end of the bed, and whenever you roll over, you kick him and he bites your foot.
Yep. Mine likes to sleep on my hip.
I can't do that.
If I try to roll over, she digs in with her claws.
We got one that will climb to the head of the bed and want to get on the pillow.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, our heads are already on the pillow.
Yeah, and they don't care about that. Yeah.
I'm sorry, any animal take a bite out of me, you'd see it laying over in the far corner of the room.
I love cats, medium rare.
Well, so do I, but all right. You know what I
mean? Especially with a nice mint sauce.
You have just upset probably the ASPCA and every other animal.
I have cats, and I love my cats, and I made a joke. If you can't take a joke, the radio has an off knob. It was a joke. I love my animals.
Complaints can be sent to the attention of
Nick Francesco.
No,
I love my animals.
18th
so
floor.
Do I. And I'm an animal owner. And if anybody from the ASPCA complains, I will take back my check.
Yeah.
No, how do you like that?
There. It's not the animal's fault. It's the owner's.
Exactly.
It's just like whether it's a dog or a cat. I've got two dogs, and it's not bad animals. It's bad people that don't train their animals the right way.
Right. Our dog. One of my dogs got out the other day. Nobody noticed it. Dog got out. Well, I thought, oh my God, where is she? Opened the back door. She was lying right outside the back door waiting to come in.
Yeah.
They're not going to leave her.
Oh, I'm out. Now what do I do?
Dog's out!
I knew that was coming. I think she got out, and then there was the dilemma of the biscuits are inside.
Yeah.
That's the problem right
there. We know where they're fed.
Forgot about that detail.
Yeah, right. Duh. Okay, back to the phones. Now we're really going to take Brian from Attica, who's probably has cats and has worked off. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
All right. Thanks, guys. No matter what I do on my computer, to open up a file or a folder, my pictures, whatever it may be, I get this critical error message. Probably closely related to your last caller, but that was so long ago I kind of forgot the answer.
Very subtle, Brian. Very subtle.
Okay. The message is, attention, some dangerous viruses detected in your system. Windows XP files corrupted. This may lead to the destruction of important files in Windows. Download protection software now.
What program is telling you this?
So no matter what I open, actually. I mean, if I click on C drive...
You've been hacked.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
Otherwise, it would say at the top, what antivirus program do you have installed?
It's Norton.
And it would say at the top, Norton Security Alert. Although, even then, that can be faked.
Yeah, right. I mean, because now, like I said, viruses aren't becoming an issue. It's spyware and Trojans.
And they take over your computer in order to send out junk to other people.
So there's two things you can do for this, Brian. You can either, you should dance the security tango.
Yes, have done it.
Immediately. If that doesn't fix it, it is one of the more and more numerous viruses that really need to be taken to a professional.
Okay.
Bring it to somebody like Dave or Steve. They'll pull your hard drive, put it on a different machine.
Unless you have a second machine to do that on.
But, right. You can do it yourself if you have a second machine, and that'll clean it up. And then you run the security tango basically on that other machine, on that other hard drive. And since the virus that is in it was not able to run, it can't block things from being deleted.
I see.
And the problem with doing it on your own machines is if it's virulent enough, accessing it can, in some cases, at least try to set it off.
Yep.
It's best if you run it on a machine where it can't write to that drive.
Sure.
You know, so that's why bringing it to guys like Dave and Steve, they put it on a machine that either it's not your problem because it's not your machine, or they'll lock it so that it can't be written to.
Right. The scary part about it is when I click no, when it says click OK to download the NI spyware and it says recommended, I click no, it still starts up Firefox for me.
Because trying to get out and do something, they may have done it.
Infect you more, So it doesn't.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter if you click yes or no. It's still infected and still trying to spread.
You've opened up the barn door. No,
you need to take it one of these guys and have them fix it.
Yep.
Very good.
Well, not very good, but it will be very good when you fix it.
All right. Hey, say hi to Rob.
We will. Yeah. Hi, Rob.
What did I? Yep. I think I.
That was Brian.
Brian says hi. Yeah. Brian from Attica says
I'm not deaf. I can hear. Thank you. Hi, Brian.
Well, there you go.
Doesn't mean you're paying attention.
Exactly.
Well, I'm trying to time out how much time you have left. You got 1 minute.
Thank you. I got your 1 minute right here. Thank you very much.
Nick, how could Brian have prevented this problem?
Unplug the internet, drop the computer in a bucket of cement, and you're good. The reality is, it's very hard to do. You do all the good things. You take your email, and you only view it in text mode. So you don't run any HTML code that may be in the mail, and therefore you can't get infected through the mail easily.
And don't download files.
Don't download files. Don't steal music from P2P sites.
Now, even if you get a file from someone you know, they could be infected. So if you weren't expecting them to send you a file, don't look at it anyway.
Right.
But we all download files for one reason or another.
And that's why I use Linux.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever I use, 99.999% of the viruses out there are for Windows. The other 0.01% are for the Mac. I run Linux. I win.
Yeah. So it is very,
like
very...
us Mac people used to win.
Yeah.
You guys used to win, and eventually Linux people won't win.
Right.
So it is very hard to know if that message popping up saying you're infected is a fake message trying to infect you or is a real message from your real antivirus program.
I have gone to sites on the internet before I turned off all pop-ups. Where I would get sites saying, your window registry is corrupted. Well, yeah, because I'm on Linux and I don't really...
Well, that is one way to...
That's awfully corrupted.
That's one way to tell if the message is fake or not. Look for bad grammar, look for bad spelling, because most of the malware is coming from overseas, where English isn't their first language. So translation errors and spelling errors and bad grammar are a real big flag that this is a fake message.
Right. Corrupted does have two R's.
Yep. There's one popping off. I had a call this week. There's a company for the Mac selling an anti-malware program called MacScan.
Right.
There isn't a malware for it to find. But what it does find is...
your money, $29.95.
Well, yeah, but it finds security programs that you may have installed yourself. It looks for keyboard viewers that businesses install to keep an eye on their employees.
Right.
It looks for... what's the other big class? There's keystroke loggers and monitoring software, something like Little Snitch, which a lot of people to run to make sure that their computer isn't trying to get out to the internet.
Right.
Well, it caused that is malicious software. So a lot depends on how you define malicious software. Adobe programs and Microsoft programs are notorious. Every time you run the program, it looks on the internet to see if it's illegal or not, which is a whole other issue. But some people just don't like their computer doing that, so they'll block outgoing connections.
Right.
And this program, MacScan, it's a legitimate program that doesn't have a legitimate purpose yet.
But it does.
But
didn't
it does
we just
not...
talk about all the viruses?
Right. As soon as they start updating it to find these new Trojan horses, then it will, yeah.
But the bottom line is we're all at risk all the time to one degree or another.
Right. Yeah, no, well, nobody has the right to be smug anymore.
It's
nobody.
Well, it's like driving your car. You can be the best driver in the world, keep your car perfectly maintained, and get hit by somebody else.
That's exactly right. And the same thing can happen.
Not your fault. Yeah.
Right. All right, we are going to take a quick break because the music started and Rob was staring out the
I've got
window.
A hand sign for 30 seconds, but I have to be careful. The camera's on in here.
Yeah, it's not quite 1 minute. Yeah, I get it. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich. Rob, does anybody really know what time it is, Linton? Me, Nick Francesco, 19 minutes after the hour, 20 minutes after the hour. Sound bites on 1180 WHAM.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Here's a kind of a sad thing that happened this week. Convicted spam king Eddie Davidson has committed suicide after killing his wife and 3-year-old daughter, according to media reports. Just 5 days ago, Davidson, the infamous online hustler of penny stocks, escaped from federal prison in Florence, Colorado. According to a story by the Denver Post, Davidson, 35, was found dead in the driveway of his home, of a home near Benenden, Colorado, an apparent gunshot suicide victim. In a 2006 silver Toyota Sequoia located in the driveway, authorities found the bodies of Davidson's wife and toddler, also gunshot victims. Oh. An unidentified teenager survived the killing spree, as did an infant in the backseat of the SUV. Davidson escaped from the minimum security prison in Florence on July 20th. Davidson was just 2 months into a 21-month federal sentence for his role in sending millions of emails promoting questionable penny stocks. The Rocky Mountain News reported that Davidson forced his wife to help him escape from the minimum security facility. I don't know how you force somebody to do something from behind bars, but I guess it's possible. The newspaper also reported that the teenager who was wounded was Davidson's daughter, who escaped the murder scene and was lucid enough to tell authorities what had happened. This whole thing is a nightmare. He had a 2-year prison sentence ordered to pay $714,000 in restitution to the IRS, forfeited all the property he purchased, including gold coins that RICO Act, you know, that he'd gotten with the ill-gotten gains.
Right.
He conducted a spamming operation from July 2002 through April 2007. The primary nature of Davidson's business consisted of providing promotional services for companies by sending large volumes of unsolicited commercial email, or as we call it, spam. He sent hundreds of thousands over the years, email messages for one type of stock, millions altogether, and now he's passed away. And no matter what else you may think of him, the death of any human being lessens us all. I was going to make this our poll of the week, but there were a couple other places that had it up as a poll, and most of the comments were just nasty. You know, okay, the guy was a spammer, but this is not right, and his wife and daughter died too, and it's just not a good thing. So
yeah,
it was not the poll of the week. All right, back to the phones. Eric from Honey Eye Falls. Welcome, Eric. What's your question?
I think what amounts to a quick question. When I try
questions
to...
are always quick, Eric. It's the answers that take forever.
When I try to run the security tango and have everything downloaded and then reboot the computer to start up in safe mode, mm-hmm. when I hit F8, I get to that screen and where you're supposed to scroll up to safe mode.
Yeah.
But I can't scroll because it doesn't. The keyboard doesn't seem to be recognized by the computer.
All right.
Is it a USB keyboard or a PS2 keyboard?
Wireless?
Or a wireless keyboard, yeah.
No, it's not wireless. It's plugged directly into the desktop tower.
Right, but on the USB connection or the PS2? The rectangular connection or the round connection?
Actually, I don't know the answer to that.
Probably USB because that's a common
problem.
And
one thing, though, is you don't have to run it in safe mode. First try running it in normal mode, because I'm finding a lot of folks, you know, with the USB keyboards and that, they're having this issue. And the reason we tell folks to do a safe mode is, one, yeah, it does make things a lot simpler, but with the issues there, the program still will run for the most part in regular mode.
There are only some few viruses that you cannot kill without going into safe mode.
So try it in regular mode, and if you really have to get into safe mode for a particular program, call us back and let us know, and I'll see if I can help you with that.
What often happens with the USB keyboards, the drivers for USB aren't loaded when you're in this DOS mode, so you make to go into your BIOS and make sure that, I loved, legacy USB is enabled. I didn't know USB was legacy yet.
Yeah, it is. Here's my favorite part. He clearly managed, it's not his fault.
To get the F8.
He clearly managed to press F8.
Yeah.
That worked. Then he goes into the menu, and the arrow keys don't work. Well, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly not his fault.
Can you type 1, 2, 3, 4? Does that work?
No.
Do you have to highlight it?
What you might be able to do is, if he gets into there, which will work sometimes, is if you hit the num lock, and that will activate the up and down arrow keys on the keypad. So try that also. It's another workaround.
Some biases.
BIOS.
BIOSes. Is it the shift or control? Hold down control key during boot and you go right into safe mode.
Right.
But not all BIOS does that.
Not all of them do that. All right. Our next caller, Jim from Manlius, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
That's near Syracuse.
Thank you. I got an email with a photo attached. I think it was
I get those PDF. All the time. Oh, I see what you're saying.
And I wanted to save it. I was going to make it into a more recognizable file. It said, to do that, I need to put it on my desktop. I said, okay. It didn't make it to the desktop, but what happened, all my icons, they're still there. But the descriptions below the icons now have highlighted boxes behind them. I can't get rid of that. I've done it once before, and I got out of it, but I can't find my way out of this
What
problem.
Seems to have happened, and it's I'm interested in seeing how this would have happened, but what seems to have happened is that you've changed the background color in your setup. So if you were to right-click on the desktop and select Properties and go into Appearance.
No, desktop.
Settings. Isn't it? No, color. Yeah.
In the desktop.
Colors. Yeah.
There's a choice down on the lower right for color. And that obviously has changed to something else.
Now, do you see these background squares all the time or only when you point to an
so
item?
What it might be is the background colors. Some of the hackers put different stuff there, screens and all that. In the display properties, if you go to desktop and scroll all the way up to the top, there's one that says none. You select none. And then you can also change the color over on the right-hand side, change it to another color, and save that and see if that gets rid of it for you.
And here's a question from what we were talking about earlier. Is this a good picture from someone you knew was sending it to you?
Yes, I believe it's trusted.
Because there are malware that attaches itself to JPEGs and PDFs that ride along with a good picture and infect you.
So even
everything
if your friend,
fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, even if your friend took a picture with their own camera and sent you a copy,
could be infected.
If their machine was infected, it would infect that picture when it got sent to you.
The picture still looks fine. It's just
it would.
Right.
Okay.
So that you would send it on to someone else.
Okay.
But I would certainly say you should, again, dance the security tango. But to solve your immediate problem, do what we just said. Go to the desktop. Go to the desktop, right-click on it, select properties. Click on the desktop tab, and then you can change the color down on the lower right there. All righty. Our next caller is Anthony from Rochester. Welcome, Anthony. What's your question?
Well, I have my audio device is not working on the computer. It's not even showing up on the icons on the lower part, so I need some help trying to figure out what I need to do to get it back.
If you go into the device manager, does it show up in there?
No, it doesn't.
Then is this onboard sound or is it a separate sound card?
It's an onboard, I believe.
All right, you might first want to go into the BIOS and make sure that it didn't get turned off in the BIOS. Because if it's turned off in the BIOS, Windows will then see it.
All right, so I need to go into BIOS.
Yeah, you've got to go into the BIOS. You got to either hit like F2 or the delete key to get into the BIOS to make sure the
You're booting up.
Yeah, while you're booting
up. During boot up, you'll see something that says press F2 to enter setup. And setup is another name for BIOS.
Okay.
And by getting in there, verify that the audio didn't get accidentally turned off.
Okay.
With some surges and all that right now. I mean, matter of fact, I've got one motherboard on one of my test benches. I just got another motherboard and chip coming because evidently we got hit. On one of them, it took a little hit in that the capacitors, you know how they have that little K on them?
Yep.
They're bubbling up.
Nice.
So I.
You seen it on K's?
Yeah.
The pluses or an X have been a known problem for like 5 years now. They swell and bulge.
I've got one that's ready to go, but luckily I've got, by tomorrow I'll have a new motherboard and that so I can swap that one out. But yeah, you want to try that.
All right, I'm in the BIOS now, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere there's a setting for audio and it may let you disable your onboard audio if you put a second audio card in. And that's what you may end up having to do. If your onboard audio has failed, you may need to buy an audio card.
The good news is audio cards are not expensive
at
all.
And the thing of it is, too, is if you see that it is enabled, what you might want to do is the CD for the particular motherboard should have the drivers on there for the sound and just try reinstalling that. If that does not work, then you're going to have to go for a new
See, if it doesn't show at all in the device manager, it means Windows doesn't see it as a device.
Well, that's why I'm wondering if it's turned off in the BIOS. Because if it's turned off in the BIOS, it won't show up in the device manager.
And that, of course, leads us to another point entirely. Thank you, Anthony, for your call. Appreciate that. Leads us to another point entirely, which is particularly during this time of year when there are so many thunderstorms around. Unless you have an uninterruptible power supply that's of a very high quality, and even then you want to be careful, you should unplug your machines during thunderstorms, and not just the power plug. Any connection to the outside world, that would include your Ethernet cable or your phone line or whatever
it is. If you have a DSL or cable router, unplug that from the wall too, because it can come in on your coax TV cable.
Through the cable router
to the computer,
exactly, and that really follows for everything. Anything that's plugged in that you'd like to have working after the thunderstorm, unplug it.
And if we're in the season of vacations, you go on vacation for a couple weeks, even a long weekend or whatever, unplug things then.
Right.
Because you're not around. If the thunderstorm comes through when you're not there and your computer's still plugged in, my wife left her computer running before we went away last weekend. I had to go and shut it off. Well, I want to get my mail. You're not here. Turn it off.
I was just about to tell you that exact same story. Yeah, the machine will get the mail and answer it for you so you don't have to ever look at it again.
The lower-end hardware is generally more susceptible to this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, everything nowadays. You know, the truth is with manufacturing costs so high and margins so narrow, all products are
general lowering
close to the
of
end.
Quality.
Right.
And for our two callers ago, there is a preference for drop shadows or non-drop shadows behind your icons. So if you're just getting a black square behind the name, that somehow could have been a preference that got set.
Right.
And that's under displays, under advanced, and I've posted a link on how to enable or disable those.
Excellent. All right, our next caller is Lance from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
Oh, howdy you.
Howdy.
Back when I was using Windows 98, I used a DOS-based text editor to look at suspicious emails, and it's only recently, it was Windows XP that I discovered where the files were in the newer version of Thunderbird. And strangely enough, you start with documents and settings, and under that, it's my name, and then application files, and eventually you get the Thunderbird profiles, and if you keep going on that, you can find find the mail and read it in text form.
Buried under there pretty good.
And then the emails all have odd names. But yes, you can find them. And you're right. If you have any sort of text editor, including Notepad, you can open that up. If you're not viewing HTML email, if you're not receiving HTML email, I meant to say.
It's Textpad that I use, and I get all the
codes.
All the garbage that goes with it, but eventually I can find the message and find out who it's from and so forth.
Right. And there's a whole set of ways you can look to see who it really came from as opposed to who it says it came from, but that's far beyond the scope of a radio show. I couldn't easily explain that here, but it is possible to do, and actually that would make a great presentation for one of the user groups. You know, how to check email by hand.
Stop sending HTML mail.
Well, that's first, right? All right, we're going to take a break because we only got a minute left. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and that was the fastest minute in radio. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I don't know if you've been following this, but there was a guy named Terry Childs, who was the system administrator for the city of San Francisco. He's accused of holding the city's network hostage by refusing to give up administrative networking passwords. He was arrested on July 12th on charges of computer tampering and is being held in the county jail.
Yeah, he changed all the passwords when he got fired or something like that.
He just wouldn't get any. He wouldn't give them up.
Yep.
He knew them all and he wouldn't give them up. Now he's on trial in the office of San Francisco District Attorney Kamala Harris has made public close to 150 username and passwords used by various departments to connect to the city's virtual private network. The password filed this week is Exhibit A and in a court document arguing against a reduction in the $5 million bail. In the case of Terry Childs, like I said, was arrested on July 12th. Though they placed the passwords in the public record, city prosecutors do seem to think that they are sensitive. The passwords discovered on Childs' computer pose an imminent threat to the city computer network, according to the court filings where they were made public.
The passwords he stole?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Childs could use the names and passwords to impersonate any of the legitimate users in the city by using their password to gain access to the system. And now, so can you. It's the San Francisco system administrator play-at-home game. Posting these passwords in public creates a security risk, although the passwords are not enough to give a criminal access to the city's VPN. The passwords are so-called phase one passwords, must be combined with a second password, which I'm sure would be so hard to guess, to access the network. The passwords are used by the city workers to access the network from home computers or via laptops, whether outside the offices. The passwords are for many city departments, including the police department, the mayor's department, and the Department of Telecommunications and Information Services, where Child works. The city should be moving very aggressively to change these passwords as quickly as possible, but we don't know if they are. Of course, the problem is in order to change those passwords, the city will have to reconfigure the VPN software running on every PC that connects remotely, which it has not yet done, before it made the passwords public.
Can you say not very bright as far as that six-pack of bulbs?
Thank heaven I'm on the entire other side of the country. That's
you
all I have to say about that.
You said San Francisco?
One. Yeah.
Okay, that makes a little more sense to me
with
now.
With flowers in my hair.
Well, it's a little more surprising to me because of the tech-savvy nature of San Francisco and all the tech companies that are there. Maybe that's this guy's...
This is municipal government, Steve.
We run
well,
software...
Maybe that's his point. These people don't know what they're talking about. Yeah. They don't know what they're doing, just trying to bring the point to
but
life.
But they gave all the power to one guy.
In a place as small as the College of Business, the E. Philip Saunders College of Business, at the Rochester Institute of Technology, just to go right in the middle. Thank you, where I am the systems administrator. We have a piece of software where I can reach out to everybody's laptop and upgrade and do whatever I got to do. But if I had to make a change like that, I would be able to do it. Well, Dave would be able to do it. I would just tell him to do it.
Now, are there people that don't know your passwords to get into stuff? So if you...
Yes, my passwords,
If you were disgruntled enough, you could screw the college.
and that's something we've talked about over and over and over again. You know, what do you do with the master password?
Mm-hmm.
What you really ought to do is write them down, seal them in an envelope, sign the back of the envelope, stick them in a safe.
I was actually listening to another podcast, and someone was asking about that, you know, a relative passed away, and they were trying to figure out how to get into his computer to get his bank accounts and his insurance information, all the normal stuff you do when someone you love passes away and you have to type their affairs. How do you get into their computer and their accounts without their passwords?
Right.
Especially if it's unanticipated.
Right.
One of the suggestions is to take this letter and mail it to your attorney. And then the guy said, I don't quite trust my attorney with my passwords. And the answer was, get an attorney you trust.
Yeah, well, there's
isn't that
the point? Do you get that?
Yeah.
Exactly. All right.
Who said that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, we have, you know, there is no perfect way to do it. But that is one way. Or put it in a safe deposit box and give someone the key. You know, someone you trust, which the only thing in that safe deposit box are your passwords. And you give it to some third party that you trust, like your lawyer.
Now, I've lost the key to my safety deposit box.
Steve, you've lost every key I know you own.
Well, no, those keys fell off my keychain. This one, I don't know where I put it, and I've moved twice since then.
Yeah.
Another thought is to give the passwords to somebody who's out of town, a family member who's out of town.
Right.
Even if he has the passwords and he opens up the envelope and knows what your passwords are, he doesn't have immediate access to your machine.
Right.
You're still safe.
One of the suggestions was to take your password and break it into chunks and then send it to three different people so that...
And let them figure out who goes first.
Right. So one person can't get into your stuff by themselves.
That would assume you've got a password that you can break into three chunks and it has at least three characters to it.
Yeah.
I know some people whose passwords are A.
Yeah. Actually, I had a call this week. The guy who was asking about the fake spyware message that popped up on his computer, and it said something along the lines of, you need a good username and password, and he says, well, I don't use passwords. Okay, yes, you are infected then.
Yes, you absolutely are.
I'm the only I'm the only user. I don't need a password.
Right.
Doesn't matter if you're the only user sitting in front of your computer. There's hundreds of millions of people at the other end trying to get in.
Right. And a different place I worked, which I will not mention because somebody will figure something out. We had a very senior vice president who said, my password is A. I said, that is the very first password that an automated system will check. He said, you're right. Make it Z.
That's the 26th password.
That's right. That's 26 times safer, but it doesn't mean anything at this point.
Is he from San Francisco?
Yeah. may have gone
had
out
to, ask.
To San Francisco with flowers in your hair.
There's something crazy in the Mac password when you're creating your administrator password. An empty password is okay, but if you have any characters in it, you have to have at least six.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 50 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Rake.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
54 minutes after the hour, Soundbites. Our next caller, John from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Gentlemen, how are you? Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you.
Quick question. A couple of weeks ago, there was a gal from Canada who called saying something. I think it was AVG, the latest version, adding things that were bad to your computer. Was it that or SpyBot or AdAware? I forgot which.
Let's bring it. I'm pretty sure it was the latest version of AVG. The free version is has a sponsorship built into it.
Okay.
Let me get to our link list.
Is that any issue that we should be worried about, seeing as they're asking everybody to upgrade and they're not supporting?
No, what it was, and I guess I don't take offense to it because I'm using it. You know, if you use the free version, matter of fact, you know, some folks complain, well, I don't want to be advertising for another company. Well, I see when I get other people's emails in and I see that advertising that they're using the free version of AVG, at least I know they're using something.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, you know, not for nothing. Yeah, you know, I'm using something that's free.
It wasn't.
And, you know, so I get an advertisement at the bottom of their email saying that this product was scanned AVG. That's okay. I can live with that.
Right. Yeah. The specific point, I just upped our link, it was on June 29th, is that when you go to a website, AVG will scan, there's in their malware scanner, it scans all the addresses on that page to see if they're good pages or bad pages, and then warns you if you try to go there. What's happening is because it's looking at every link on that page, it's significantly adding to the internet traffic.
Okay, all right.
And for people who pay, it was an article reported in the UK, people who pay by the pay by the byte, having their web page, basically every page you go to opens every single page on that link in the background, seeing if it's bad or not before you click on it yourself.
All right. So you guys are still good on AVG. No problems there, though.
Correct.
Okay.
Love it.
Beautiful. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right.
There's a vast. In fact, there was a commercial on earlier. It's Pirate Days at the Renaissance Fair.
Right.
So you can be a pirate arg.
Okay.
For a vast antivirus.
Oh, all right.
You didn't say your arg there. You know.
Got it.
Avast me.
Hey, have I got time for one more call? Do
yes,
I?
Yes, you do.
Thank you. Our next caller is Mary from Victor. Welcome, Mary. What's your question?
I have an iMac, and every time I start it up from the cold start, I get iMovie loaded on there. What can I do to get iMovie off?
You have accidentally told it to do that.
Okay.
If you click and hold on the iMovie icon in the dock, or you right-click on it if you have a two-button mouse,
yes.
One of the options is open at startup, and or open at login. And you just uncheck that, and then it won't. So a lot of people like, say, having their email program. Every time you turn the computer on, it opens your email program and gets your mail.
Yes.
So you can tell it to open at login. So what probably happened is one time when you did want iMovie to open, you accidentally checked on that open at login.
Thank
so now it opens every time.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
I've done the same thing, Mary.
Yep, it's very common. You can also go into System Preferences under Accounts, under login items, and see all of the things that are set to automatically open when you log into your computer. And there's a few things in there, like your email scanner might be in there, the iTunes helper might be in there. There's a few programs that are okay and normal to be in there, but if there's programs you don't want to open at startup, you can remove them all at once from there. So it's one of those helpful tips that sometimes turns on you.
That's a very nice tip, though.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're not on then. Okay, 1 minute. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Thank
you so much. To be continued.
Exactly. All right, that is it for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. We appreciate each and every phone call every week. Thank you all. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier and more often next time. Chicago Style of Voting, it's the Chicago Style of Calling In. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray and Chris Reich, who every week just so generously gives of his time and his talent and his abilities to take what we do and sweeten it up and clean it up and make it pretty and make it nice and put it up on the podcast. And it is a truly professional thing that he does every week, and we appreciate it. And Rob Linton, who does something truly professional somewhere but doesn't seem to bring it here. But that's okay, because we love him anyway. Just one for you, too, and that's what we love about Rob.